call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for May 21st, 2018 to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Kennedy, here. Mr. Frye?
Here.
Mr. Hayden?
Here.
Mrs. Husseman?
Here.
Mr. Lukey?
Here.
Mr. Richardson?
Here.
Mrs. Westfall?
Here.
All members of City Council are present, therefore a quorum does exist. I welcome our guests to the meeting tonight. My understanding is you are all from Whitmer High School. We're glad you're here. You're welcome to stay as long as you want. You're going to hear about a special Health Department initiative tonight, Tobacco 21. They're going to be added to our agenda, so you're a good audience for that. If you have any questions during the meeting, please raise your hand and I'll recognize you at an appropriate time. With that, please join us in our Pledge of Allegiance, this meeting led by Mr. Frye.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Additions to the agenda. I do have some additions for you. As you were notified by the clerk via email today, as Agenda Item 4A, we will be hearing a presentation from the Toledo Lucas County Health Department about their Tobacco 21 initiative. And I would like to add, I would like to add, as Agenda Item 14, a presentation of colors for the Main Street Streetscape Improvement Project. You've all had those passed out to you tonight. Mr. Aller will be presenting them as Agenda Item 14. Mrs. Westfall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I give the report in the public hearing, we're going to add Proposed Ordinance Number 20-2018.
Those were distributed at your places tonight.
That's all, thank you.
Additional items from members of City Council? Hearing none from members of the city staff. Mr. Sanford?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Sanford is Economic Development Director. From our Finance Director, Mr. Schreier?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
From the Chief of Police, Mr. Rodas, Chief Rodas?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
From our Service Director, Kevin Aller?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Or the City Attorney, Leslie Brining?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved. Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda Item 4 is approval of the meeting minutes from our last meeting on May 7th, 2018. Mrs. Westfall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of the minutes for the Sylvania City Council meeting held on May 7th, 2018.
Second.
And moved and seconded to approve the meeting minutes as submitted for our May 7th, 2018 meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and those meeting minutes are approved as submitted. Added Agenda Item 4A, we welcome Safah Ibrahim. Is that close? Come on up and present both of you, whoever you'd like to do this. I would like to tell City Council that I attended a meeting down at the Toledo Lucas County Health Department offices on May 26th. And in attendance also was Mayor Richard Carr of City of Maumee, Mayor Kapsakiewicz from Toledo, and also the city manager, Michael Beasley from Oregon, was there as well. We had a preview of what you're going to be introduced with tonight, and these ladies are going to share it with you. There was a handout that they distributed to you, so the floor is yours.
Good evening. I apologize for approaching council a little early. I have a little My name is Shannon Lamb, and I'm the Director of Health Promotion and Policy Integration at the Toledo Lucas County Health Department. Here tonight, I have Safah Ibrahim with me. She is the Tobacco Prevention Coordinator at the Health Department, and we have been working very diligently contacting the separate villages and cities in regard to Tobacco 21 and the initiative to change the legal age of purchasing tobacco products from 18 to 21 on a very individualistic level, starting with the villages and the cities. We have approached the mayors of the different cities and of the villages along with City Council, trying to get everyone on the same page in supportive of this initiative. We find that it would be advantageous if we were able charter support, and then also answer any questions that may be proposed at this time. So I'm going to hand it over to Safaa. She has a few slides she'd like to present, and then we can open the floor to any questions.
Is it okay if I just stand right here?
Yeah.
As she said, I'm Safaa Abraham. I'm the Tobacco Prevention Program Coordinator. I've been with the Health Department for about 2 years now, and been working and moving me on this Tobacco 21 initiative, and thank you for having us here to present it to you. So as Shannon said, the Tobacco 21 initiative is raising the minimum age of tobacco purchase from 18 to 21. Where we are trying to do this, Sylvania, Toledo, Oregon, Maumee, Collins, Lawton, Waterville, White House, and Ottawa Hills. We have approached everybody on this list other than a few meetings that are scheduled, Collins, Oregon, and then today Sylvania. So everybody has been talked to other than those two. One thing I would like to state is actually White House is on the way of writing an ordinance. They're drafting an ordinance right now, and then it'll go through three public hearings, or readings, public hearings. Why do we want to do this? As you're aware, we do a community health assessment, and the 2016 and 2017 community health assessment, the age onset of tobacco use was 12 and a half. In the 2013 and 2014 community health assessment, it was 13.3. So youth are starting to smoke or use tobacco products at an earlier age, and that's really concerning. We're trying to eliminate them from even starting in the high schools. So if we limit the age from 18 to 21, the high school seniors will not be able to provide tobacco products for the freshmen, sophomore, or junior. Tobacco compliance checks. So at the Toledo County Health Department, we do annual compliance checks with the Toledo Police Department Vice Unit. Every year we do about 32, and just these 6 months we did 16, and out of the 16, five of the tobacco retailers actually sold to youth. And we don't use like 17-year-olds, we use like a 13-year-old, and these tobacco retailers are still selling to them. So we find that very concerning. As you can see in your packets, there's a proven success in Newton and New York City. They implemented the tobacco. Needham, Massachusetts was the first city in the United States to implement the Tobacco 21 initiative. And within 5 years of implementation, the Needham smoking rate amongst youth in their high school decreased from 13 to 6.7%. That's like a big decrease and a big success for the Tobacco 21 initiative. New York City is another city that passed the Tobacco 21 initiative. And they used the Youth Risk Behavior Survey to determine between 2015 and 2013 if there was a difference in tobacco use rates, and there was a decrease amongst youth. It decreased from 12.5 to 9.0% of tobacco users. So as you can see, there's proven success in the Tobacco 21 initiative with research behind it. As of right now, 10 cities, including Columbus, Cleveland, Dublin, Upper Arlington, Euclid, Powell, New Albany, Grandview Heights, Bexley, and Akron was the most recent one as of April 16th. So 10 cities in Ohio have adopted the Tobacco 21 initiative. So why not have Sylvania be the 11th? In Sylvania alone, there are 24 tobacco retailers, and some of these are in walking distance from schools. I actually was talking to Sandy earlier. We started working with SCAT this year, the Sylvania Community Action Team, and we actually implemented, I don't know if anybody was at the Hot Cocoa 5K this year, but we actually worked with the kids of SCAT, and we made posters along the trail that were like funny about smoking. Like one was, pick up the cocoa and drop the cigarette. Like, they were very creative and the youth were very involved. So we tried to implement more tobacco objectives in the Sylvania Community Action Team and work on the kids with that. Not only did we do the 5K with them, but we also worked on store audits. So every year we do about 20% of all tobacco retailers in Lucas County. So I actually took some of the SCAT kids out and we went out and audited the stores and saw how these stores are marketing the tobacco to catch the children's eye, or how they're trying to pull people in and smoking in the first place. And then I would like to discuss our previous efforts. So this Quebec Women Initiative has been going on since 2015. In the beginning, it was just the University of Toledo doctorate, Dr. Thompson, Glassman, and a few PhD students. But as of 2016, we collaborated efforts with them and tried to hit all the cities and villages. We've met with members of council and mayors and chief of staffs and created community surveys. For example, this year we distributed 700 surveys to Lucas County residents, and we had a 536 out of 700 actual response. And with that, 73.9% of the survey community residents actually support the Tobacco 21 initiative. So we're trying to gain not just decision maker support, but also community support and trying to inform them and educate them on the initiative. So now it's 2018, and we're trying to move forward with this, and we would like to invite you to join us in this and support the Tobacco 21 initiative.
If I may share a few more comments that came from the different mayors. The question was raised by all of us, is does this only affect the city and the village residents and our stores here? And the answer is yes. Townships do not have the legal ability to pass legislation and pass laws. So unless it is done by the state of Ohio, it can only be done by the next level of government, and that's cities and villages that can pass laws. So if passing, it will only be within the city limits. And in Toledo, that makes sense, because if you're in Toledo, you might have to travel a long way to get out. So it was decided that a good way to go about this is that all the cities and villages do it at one time, so that at least those are covered, but this will not cover the township areas. Southview High School will still be near the edges, though the Kroger complex is in the city limits. You go down to the Rite Aid on Central Avenue, that is not inside the city limits. So that needs to be thought about in your deliberations. We don't expect any action tonight. There is no legislation prepared to you, though I did see some sample ordinances were supplied to me when I came down to the health department, as I recall. For City Council, I would recommend that if you're interested, this be referred to committee, either Committee of the Whole or Safety Committee. This is a health issue. I'm sure there are political sides to be spoken of both ways. You may want to talk to your peers in other communities to see what their thoughts are. But this was the opportunity that I was told would be coming back in March, and here you are. We appreciate your time to come out. Any questions for the health department?
Go ahead.
Yes. I have a great concern about vaping. And I know this is tobacco, so you're doing one part, which is wonderful. Has there been any consideration to adding e-cigarettes? All right.
Yeah, so that's like one plus that we have. So vape shops are popping up everywhere around Ohio. When I contacted the Ohio Department of Health, they can't even keep track of where the vape shops are located and stuff if they don't sell tobacco products. Because if they don't sell tobacco products, then they're not required to get a CRL. So vape shops are very transparent in the high schools as well. So that's why we just decided the Tobacco 21 initiative is going to cover all fronts. Tobacco products, hookah, e-cigarettes, vaping device,
Juul,
those specifics, Juul, anything that is electronic that makes vape up, those little words, they're all going to be included in the Tobacco 21 initiative. So thank you for bringing that up, but it will be included in the Tobacco 21 initiative.
The question, what have you seen in the way of organized opposition to this proposal? Who can we expect to call us and say that this is a bad idea?
The one thing I could say about tobacco
relatively small number.
So I had a question, and this might be for somebody else, but are you looking for us to pass, would this be a resolution of us supporting a change in state law, or no? We're saying an ordinance for us to do it here?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So this would not, you're not talking about changing any laws on the state level? That's not a goal with you?
Not yet, not yet.
Okay.
We have to initiate that first, and then hopefully in long term, it will be a statewide.
Gotcha, thank you.
So a couple of other questions. You mentioned that 5 of the 16 locations that you, that were surveyed, sold to underage citizens. What's the fine for that underage sale?
So it was like a tag team effort. So I would stay in the car with the vice unit, and then the youth would go in, and then when the youth goes in out, the other vice unit team would go in and then give them a citation, and at that citation they're required to go to court. On the citation itself, it does not say the fine, and it's dependent on the retailer's history and what the judge wants to give them, but I know it's a minimal of $200. And then if they're previous offenders of it, then it gets more, or they have to go to jail for 30 days. But the specifics on how much, it's different for each specific person on their history.
And I think I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. You mentioned that the average starting age is 13, give or take, early on in the presentation. So is your thought process, we're trying to prevent people, all people under the age of 21, from getting access to these products, or are you trying to eliminate the people under the age of 18 from getting these products? Okay, so that's why I'm just trying to get clear, because I've heard two different sides of this, not from you guys, but just generally speaking. So everybody under the age of 21, recognizing that people over the age of 21 may well give it to a under 21 person, correct?
Yes. Our main thought for this is if anybody is not smoking before the age of 21, they are either very unlikely to start. So by eliminating
by how much? Do you know?
I think he's assuming it's coming his way.
Thank you.
I have a few questions. It's illegal to sell to minors under 18 now, correct?
Yes.
And that fine is a minimum of 200 or jail up to 30 days. Well, does your ordinance provide for jails, time, and fines?
No. The ordinance examples that we have, the first would be a warning and a sit-down educational session on why they shouldn't be selling to under 21. The second one would be a fine. The third one would be a fine and potential decision of revoking their tobacco retail license, but nothing about jail time.
Okay. Is it illegal for the minors to buy the cigarettes if they're under 18 currently? For example, it's not just illegal for the retailer, it's illegal for the minor to buy.
Yes.
And what's their, what jail term are they exposed to?
I'm unaware.
Okay. It's illegal for an 18-year-old to buy cigarettes and give it to a minor currently, is that correct?
Yes.
And it would be illegal for someone over 21 who legally bought cigarettes or tobacco products to give it to someone under 21.
Yes.
Okay, so with no change in the law, the activity you're concerned about is already illegal, correct?
Yes.
Okay. In terms of the 24 tobacco retailers in Sylvania, is that just in the city?
Yes.
How many tobacco retailers are there in Sylvania Township? Okay. Do you know how many tobacco retailers there are in just the town, you know, Sylvania's a little six-mile town surrounded by Sylvania, Springfield Township, Fulton Township's nearby, and the state of Michigan. Do you know how many tobacco retailers there are in those counties and areas?
Not at the top of my hand, but we do have a database provided to us by OEDH that lets us limit to the location and how many retailers are in it, which is where I got the Sylvania numbers. So I can actually follow up with Sharon and get you those numbers.
Do you have the same statistics regarding vaping centers that you want to outlaw?
The people who have CRLs, yes, I do. But people who do not have CRLs, I do not.
So they're unregulated presently, is that correct?
Yes. Unless they sell tobacco products.
If they don't sell tobacco products, is there an age limitation on vaping?
Yeah, it would be included in the tobacco 21.
But is there currently in state law an age limitation on vaping? Currently.
Yes.
It's already that. It's already there. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many juvenile prosecutions there have been for illegal purchase of tobacco products in Lucas County in any time period? Have there been any? Okay. What are you doing today to enforce the law that's on the books already to achieve your goal?
We just do the annual compliance checks with the vice unit. We have a list of all the tobacco retailers in Lucas County. We do a random sample of them, and the vice unit will pick certain stores as well, and we do 32 on average every year.
Okay.
So, I think additionally to that, I'm sorry if I may interrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you, do you know how many more criminals you'll create if you raise the age from 18 to 21? Do you have any experience in the other communities that have passed this?
No, but I can get that information from the, it's harder to get those specific research numbers for the most recent people who adopted the Tobacco 21 initiative. As you can see, Needham, I think, was 2013. So like long-term research and statistic-wise, they're, New York was 2009, I believe. But long-term research, there hasn't been, other than those two main cities. So finding the most recent research on this, because it's such a long-term and hopefully a fast-moving initiative, the actual statistic-wise takes a longer time to get in and see an actual difference in previous smokers now smokers.
So there are 10 cities and villages. Oh, these are all cities.
These are all cities. Yeah. So those are all
10 cities that have adopted. Have they adopted enhanced enforcement programs as well?
So their enforcement technique is a license through their health department, and the health department actually enforces the Tobacco 21 initiative.
A lot of the different cities have developed and drafted their own ordinance, making it very unique for their community. So what City of Toledo does may be uniquely different from what City of Sylvania does. And that's the beauty of putting together an ordinance like this, because you can pick and choose some of the differences and what is unique to your community.
How would someone know that the City of Sylvania, it was illegal for a 19-year-old. How would a 19-year-old know that it was illegal to purchase cigarettes at the Speedway on McCord and Sylvania, but not illegal to purchase it at the intersection of McCord and Central Avenue.
We will work with each of the tobacco establishments, retail establishments within the city, providing signage, because everything is going to have to be changed. They're going to get a letter, they're going to get education, so on and so forth, implementing this. And these are discussions that we can have, you know, more so in depth if this does get put into committee of the whole or separate committees, such as what Mayor had suggested. We'd be more than happy to provide all this information.
Does any of this any of these cities, did they enact mandatory signage requirements or notice requirements?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's part of the process of implementing an ordinance. You can't expect for enforcement when you haven't educated the retailers, the citizens, the community, so on and so forth. I mean, that's something that we would take great pride in. Safa, before she became coordinator, was a health educator, so this is her bread and butter in what she is very, very talented in doing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I had a couple follow-up questions. Mr. Hanum struck a couple chords with me. So who actually, out of those five entities who presumably were fined, that you caught selling to underage people, who's liable? Is it the person selling, or is it the person who owns the establishment? Okay. And is there an age limit today for the individuals who are across the counter behind the cash register to sell products like this? Or can a 17-year-old young person at the local Speedway out here in the corner sell to somebody who's refused somebody who's 17? Okay, so does the legislation you're contemplating assume that you're now going to require 21-year-olds to be the only, or older individuals, 21 or older, that are going to be only permitted to sell tobacco products? Or is an 18-year-old going to be able to tell a 20-year-old, no, you can't buy this product? Understand.
But I can definitely look into it for you, because I've never had that question.
But we're looking to craft the law, so those things become important.
Yes.
as part of this. If we're going to contemplate this, we need to make sure those things are thought through, plus the incremental costs associated with putting somebody else on staff, or because this isn't Kroger's, right. You know, where, you know, the person walks over, because I've done this before, person walks over from the other cash register, runs it across, walks back, and they take care of their next customer, and they take the rest of my order out. We're talking about at the local corner Speedway, where there may only be one or two people there. Thank you.
So one of the things I think we're seeing is there's still lots of questions to be answered, and I think the mayor suggested early on that we move it to a committee. So,
well, we have the experts here. I have a follow-up question.
My question was, would you be willing to join at a committee meeting for more further detailed conversation?
Okay, let me ask one more question before we move this to committee. So you don't have model legislation. You have 10 cities that have adopted 10 different pieces of legislation, all different pieces of legislation?
No, they're all similar, but they make them specific to their city. Like, for example, if somebody's going to be using the Franklin County Public Health Department, they'll put in the licensing agent of the Franklin County Public Health Department, but all of the wording and all of the actual ordinance statements, I'm not legal, sorry, they're all similar. We use the Columbus ordinance as a model policy for the other cities around here.
And that's what all the cities have adopted, the Columbus? Version. And yeah, I would like to see that as soon as possible. Thank you.
So one of the things that we'd like to consider is moving it to committee, and it might be helpful, Mr. Fry, if you'd be comfortable, could we move it to safety?
Sure. Sure, absolutely.
Okay, and one of the questions I think might be helpful, we've seen this happen in other circumstances, is if council members have questions, perhaps they could forward them to Sharon in advance. And Sharon could pass them along to you, so when you come to a committee meeting, you have a sense of what the questions are and what additional information council members might be interested in receiving from you.
We would like you to have you forward the model legislation tomorrow to Sharon, and she can distribute it to all members of City Council. I know that I saw it when I was down at the Health Department offices, and council should have the ability to see it as well.
Mr. Mayor, since there's other communities that may be moving potentially in concert, was there a time frame discussed associated with the passage of this?
It was discussed that we would all try to get onto it this summer.
Okay.
Sometime during the summer. No, it's not get it done in 30 days.
Well, that's why I was wondering whether we need to set a meeting up or whatever.
No. And I think you're going to want to include Chief Rodas in your committee meeting. The police department has experience with enforcing liquor sales. We just, a month or so ago, did a test of our alcohol sellers in Sylvania and found some that were not following the rules, found many that were following the rules. And this could be a similar sort of situation.
Right. Thank you.
So I would like to make a motion that we move this discussion to the safety committee.
Second.
Moved and seconded to refer the Tobacco 21 issue to the Safety Committee for further study and a recommendation. Any further discussion at this time? All in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Let the clerk please call the roll.
Mrs. Cappellini?
Yes.
Mr. Fry?
Yes.
Mr. Hanum?
No.
Mrs. Hussman?
Yes.
Mr. Lukey?
Yes.
Mr. Richardson?
Yes.
Yes.
Vote is 6-1. The issue is referred to the Safety Committee. Mr. Fry, would you like to try to set your committee meeting now or undergo some research and contact council members at a later time?
I'd like to undergo some research, look at the legislation.
Very good.
Talk to Chief Rodas.
I agree with that. Ladies, thank you for coming. We appreciate your attention and coming out to talk to us special.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Does Sharon have both of your contact information?
It's on the last page.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Perfect.
And we will, the clerk will forward it to all of you so you all have the same information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on in the agenda. Back on the scheduled agenda, we're to agenda item number 5. This is proposed ordinance 20-2018. This is regarding the placement of banners in the downtown area. You have in your council packets 5A, which is the recommendation of the Planning Commission, recommending council to approve the proposed ordinance. And there was a public hearing held this evening at 7 o'clock in these council chambers. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, as you mentioned, there was a public hearing held this evening, Monday, May 21st at 7 o'clock here in the council chambers. All members of council were present, and most of the members of city administration were present as well. At that time, we welcome public comment on proposed ordinance 20-2018, requesting an amendment to the Part 11 of the Planning and Zoning Code, amending Section 1166.07, Standards for Permitted Signs. As the mayor mentioned, it did receive support from the Sylvania Municipal Planning Commission at their May 15, 2018 meeting. There was no one here to make public comment. City Council did make a motion to advance this legislation to City Council meeting this evening for further approval.
Mayor, just to clarify, we had a question of who could apply for the applications. We are not clarifying that in the legislation. We already have a banner legislation. We're just adding a new location. The 5800 block of Main Street is being added, but the rules remain the same. I know some members of council haven't seen one of these come through because we haven't had one on Monroe Street for a couple of years. We used to get it annually from the miniature remote controlled airplane group, and I think we've got it from a few other groups, but we just haven't seen these. Every application will come to you for your consideration. That's the way the legislation was set up. That's the way we discussed it in committee, and you will get to see it, each one. But it was requested by Lawrence University because they want to become a town and gown town.
Right, and they cannot be for commercial or political purposes.
Correct. They are for fundraisers. I would think that the St. Joseph Festorama is one possibility if they want to spend the money to do it. There are other religious organizations or other fundraisers that could spend the money to do it, but it's not inexpensive to do. They have to buy the banner, and they have to put it up and take it down. The discussion with the Chamber of Commerce was to make sure that it did not interfere with the new downtown lights. All right, the administration recommends passage of Ordinance 20-2018. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce Ordinance Number 20-2018. All members of council having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only. Amending Part 11, Planning and Zoning Code of the Codified Ordinances of Sylvania 1979 as amended by amending Section 1166.07, Standards for Permitted Signs, waiving the second and third reading and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that Ordinance Number 20-2018 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of Ordinance Number 20-2018.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of Ordinance 20-2018 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and Ordinance 20-2018 is approved. Mr. Sanford, do you have any inclination when Lords might be in and ask for one of these?
I think now that they'd be shooting for the fall semester.
Welcoming the students back to campus probably mid-August or so would be my guess as well.
I'll verify that, but I think that's the...
Let them know that it passed. Let them know that the legislation passed and give them the timeline. There's got to be time for it to come to City Council for approval and then to create the banner and get it up. So they really ought to come in June, I would think. Remember, we only have one meeting towards the end of July and one meeting towards the end of August, so they need to get on it, I think. All right, let's move on to agenda item 6. This is proposed ordinance 21-2018. This has to do with amending section 1101.861 for a medical marijuana dispensary. You have in your council packets the recommendation of the Sylvania Municipal Planning Commission recommending approval of the ordinance as submitted. We do, because this is a zoning ordinance change, we need to set a public hearing date. Mr. Hanum, the clerk, has determined that July 16th is the first available date for that public hearing. We do not have a meeting on July 2nd.
So, Mr. Mayor, I move that we set a public hearing for proposed ordinance number 21-2018 for July 16th. At 7 o'clock p.m.
Is that going to give us enough time?
Yeah, it will.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on setting it that night? Time was too short to get it on in the first meeting in June, and that's why we had to go to July 16th. All in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the clerk is ordered to advertise for public hearing that night. Moving on to agenda item 7. This is the first of three street projects to be discussed tonight. You have in your council packets a report from the service director concerning this safety project, the safety improvement project that we've discussed previously along Alexis Road. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The project at this stage has been estimated, a preliminary estimate of $745,000. We have been awarded $551,300 in grant funds through the ODOT safety program. They are ready to move forward into design. They've done their quality-based selection with the engineering firms and are ready to move forward. Tetra Tech is the engineering firm that ODOT selected. ODOT is handling the design and construction management and things of that nature on this project. they've come, our portion of the project is $30,160 for the engineering and up to $163,540 for the construction. At this time in 2008, this agreement covers both of those amounts. It covers the entire project. But for 2018, we appropriated only the engineering funds because the construction phase of this project will take place in 2019. So those funds will be appropriated next year. But the engineering was included in the capital improvements plan for 2018, and we would recommend approval of the ordinance.
Mr. Aller, if you would remind me and City Council the scope of the improvements. The study was done to determine whether we would build a central or a center of the road median strip that could not be passed over, as they have done in other communities down at Central in Holland, Sylvania. It's in place. If you ever get off 280 over at Navarre Avenue, that project has just been completed over there. That was not the result of this engineering study here. Tell us the scope of this work.
That's correct. This project will include two new signals, mast arms and everything at both Acres and Alexis and Elliott and Alexis. It will include a new right turn southbound Acres, right turn drop lane so that you can, if you're coming down Acres, you can make the right turn onto Alexis and not have to wait for all of the straight or the left turn action is typically the one that holds up traffic. But there'll be a new right turn lane on Acres. There'll be some lane channelizations and things of that nature at Elliott, and some improvements made to the Elliott intersection with the Rite Aid development that's on the south side of Alexis.
So, Mr. Mayor, if I could, I just want to make sure that I understand that some of the concerns that our business owners along Alexis had and presented to us a couple times are not in this project, right? We're addressing those concerns.
That's
and it'll be, they'll still have access to their businesses.
Yeah, there's no median of any nature that's part of this project.
We'll still be able to do left turns into and left turns out of the businesses.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Administration recommends approval of this attached ordinance so that we can proceed with the engineering for this project. It is in your council packets as under 7B, Ordinance 27-2018. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to introduce Ordinance Number 27-2018. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Authorizing the Mayor and Director of Finance of the City of Sylvania, Ohio, to enter into an agreement between the State of Ohio Department of Transportation and the City of Sylvania for the Alexis Road at Elliott and Acres Road Intersection Improvement Project, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that Ordinance Number 27-2018 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of Ordinance Number 27-2018.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of Ordinance 27-2018 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and Ordinance 27-2018 is approved. One of those businesses on Alexis Road, a new one, the Tony Paco's, is having a grand opening. I think you all got notice of this. Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. I don't know whether they're going to hand out free samples, but I can't imagine that they won't do something. And if you've not driven by, they have totally changed that building in its appearance. It looks like a totally new building on the outside, but they kept the structure of the building. It's a nice improvement for our community, and they're going to be opening it, and they will have a drive-through lane. That is the main reason for their move, to have a drive-through. Okay. Moving on to agenda item 8. This has to do with the Alexis Road resurfacing and storm sewer improvement project. Report from the service director, Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In March of this year, we came to council for approval to participate in the project with ODOT. This was a project that we weren't, we really didn't get good information on from ODOT in advance so that we could plan like we normally plan. It caught us off guard. We weren't aware of it. That's rare. Typically, we coordinate projects pretty well with ODOT and the county and make sure that we're working in sync with each other. But this one did, it caught us off guard. We were able to move quickly and keep the project moving forward. While they're in there doing their work, is the right time for us to be doing our work. And so it's a good idea to continue to move forward. In April, however, when the bids were received, the bids came in substantially higher than what the engineer's estimate were. The District 2 estimate, the total project bid of just over $3 million, $3,011,958.70, was more than 17% over the District 2 estimate and 7.6% over the central office estimate. Central office always adjusts the estimates based on some inflation factors and things of that nature. In taking a look at the project, the amount that was over the original estimate, $203,880 of that would be in the city portion of the project. So we would be looking at participating with an additional amount of $203,880, bringing our total participation to about $755,000. We still believe that it's prudent to move forward at this time. If we don't move forward at this time, we're going to be tearing up the same pavement that ODOT's putting down. It will actually be more money because then we'll have to replace that asphalt. With the way this project is structured, ODOT is carrying all of the asphalt cost, so that's not on us. All we have is pipe costs. The bidding climate right now just seems to be one that contractors have as much work as they can possibly take, and the bidding market is high right now. And I think this project has just been a victim of that, if you will, and is costing us a little higher dollars than what was originally anticipated. We are looking at trying to be responsible in that capital budget. We've already talked with OP, Ohio Public Works Commission, and we're going to move, they've allowed us to move Brook Hill Court, which is a project that was originally planned for this year. We're going to move that into our 2019 capital improvement plan, and we won't suffer any disadvantages in our future scoring for those projects, and so we're able to save money there. If we proceed with all of the projects that we have planned that were originally in the 2018 capital improvements plan, less the Brook Hill Court project, we would be looking at looking to do an additional appropriation towards the end of the year once we know what capital, the definite cost of the projects, because again, some of these projects may come in less, but we would be looking at being approximately $130,000 over the original estimate of $2.92 million. I do know that we have a deduct on this project of approximately $35,000 that will be coming our way as soon as the contracts are signed. We're modifying one of the construction methods for a portion of the pipe that will reduce that cost by $35,000. So now we're down to less than $100,000. So that's why I say by the end of the year, we may be right back in line with the capital improvement budget, or we take a look and adjust some additional projects like we did for Brook Hill Court. So we remain diligent in know, staying within that capital improvement plan budget, but we do recommend that we move forward with this project and the approval of the additional funding.
Kevin, a couple of questions. The ordinance that we just approved regarding the Acres to Elliott section and this ordinance, presuming it moves forward, how do those interact?
They're obviously, portions of them are in the same area, but we won't be, the safety improvements project will not be any new asphalt as part of that project. There will be some restriping and some rechannelization of some lanes, but those costs are very minimal in the realm of the $700,000 project. We won't be tearing up any asphalt or anything of that nature with the safety project that is being put down with the storm sewer project. So I believe what you're alluding to is, are we putting something down that we're going to tear up? Well, and we won't be doing
not just that, just disruption of business. When are these projects, are they going to occur simultaneously, or are they going to get finished with one and 2 weeks later they're going to start the next one and mess people's business, you know, traffic flow up again?
We just found out the storm sewer project is actually looking to begin June 18th of this summer, and will be completed. They're hoping to have it completed by the end of school, but that's a pretty tight construction schedule.
By the start of school.
Oh, the start of school, I'm sorry, yes.
I knew what you meant. Which is the reason I looked at you.
Yeah, I didn't realize I misspoke there. My apologies. Ever ready by the start of school. The safety project will be in 2019. And the impacts on that one will be very minimal because it's going to be primarily signal work, pole work, and we won't have to disrupt the traffic very much other than some temporary signals.
And refresh my memory and maybe other members of council as well. Once we're finished, if this project is approved, what's going to happen or what won't happen going forward with the changes that we're talking about making?
We have an area, a couple areas actually, along Alexis Road that during the large rain events, and not so much the small rains over a long period, but the gully washers that come down in 10 minutes. We have some areas along that Alexis Road corridor that flood. The building that's at Schultz, the Sylvania Diner, that's at Schultz and at Lexus.
Been there.
Yeah, that building has had, you know, up to their knees in water. And so one of the things that we're taking care of is we upsize some of our storm drainage system to be able to alleviate that and take care of that. We put some of the storm sewer system that's even further to the east of the Sylvania Diner. We've increased some of those pipe sizes because we last year council also authorized some funding to take a look at the whole storm drainage system of the Whetstone Park area and the area north of Alexis. We now have a storm sewer plan that as we move into those areas we'll be able to accommodate better storm drainage, which will help the pavements in that area last longer, and you know, just improvements to the general drainage system of that area. There is no storm drains in that area right now. And so we're putting in the pipe sizes up on the Alexis Road system to be able to accommodate that once those systems are built.
Thank you.
Mr. Aller, I have a quick question. I wonder if you could give me a point of clarification on what our total cost will be. I thought you said $755,000, but the legislation, I think, says $855,000, so I'm just a little confused. I don't know if I misunderstood.
The $755,000 is what the safety project will cost. That's total project cost. Our contribution is less than $200,000. This storm sewer project is $855,720. Yes.
I wrote it down.
So if I did misspeak,
That's all right. I just want a clarification.
Getting the two projects together, I apologize, but you are correct.
Thank you.
This project is...
Okay.
Okay, I have a question, too. How did... Okay. It looks like we have a 31% increase over what we originally had, but the bid was 17% over what was expected. So what happened?
Some of the when the total cost of the project came together, 17%, our portion was higher than the total project in general.
Okay.
One of the things, a $35,000 deduct that we anticipate, part of the project, our utilities requested that all of the project be in low-strength mortar backfill. And it's because it's within the influence of the pavement. And there's merit to that. But one of the things that Joe Schall and I have done is we've taken a look and we've tried to reduce those areas where we're right on the edge of that influence of the pavement, but maybe low strength mortar isn't really needed, or we will be okay with just normal stone backfill. And so we reduced those areas in an effort to try to reduce our costs, our share of the project. And that low strength mortar backfill was a high, that those bids came in substantially higher than what is typical. So yeah. That's where we got hit a little harder than the other areas.
Okay. Well, we got to do this, so.
And I'm in further conversation with the service director. We rebid it again now, the bids are going to come in higher.
Right.
We are best to take this bid. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 28. 2018. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only, authorizing the mayor and director of finance to approve the increase in cost relative to the Alexis Road resurfacing and storm sewer improvement project, appropriating funds therefore in the amount of $203,880, waiving the second and third reading and declaring an emergency.
It's moved and seconded that ordinance number 28-2018 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 28-2018.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 28-2018 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 28-2018 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 9. This is a joint cooperation agreement with the Lucas County Commissioners and the Engineer's Office for paving work in 2019. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The coordination and cooperation that I spoke of earlier with the county engineer, this is a good example of that. Last year, council authorized us to submit our Ohio Public Works Commission grant application for a project that takes in some resurfacing on four different roads, Brett Road, Centennial Road, Sylvania Metamora Road, and King Road. It'll be a resurfacing project, your typical mill and fill type construction. During that initial application submittal to the district, it's not necessary to have the joint cooperation agreements actually in place and signed. However, when those applications are submitted to the state office, then those do have to be completed, signed, and to be able to submit to the state offices. So we're getting ready to move forward and submit those applications will be forwarded to the state office, and therefore we're ready to move forward with the application with the county. The total cost of the project is estimated at $1,112,672. We will be receiving $433,942 in a combination of grant and 0% interest loan funds. Approximately 61% of the project is within the city, so that our share of the project comes to $678,730. And our actual cash outlay, net payment, if you will, is $414,025 once you take the grant funds and the loan funds into account. So the loan term is a 10-year period that will pay that back. And so you can see that our annual loan repayment is $13,332, but that is at 0% interest. So again, we recommend approval of the agreement and moving forward with the project with the county engineer.
So Kevin, the 414 is 2019 plus another 13 grand a year for 10 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Allen, we have a similar agreement on Pennsylvania Avenue repaving. Tell us about that one as well.
Yes, that project is a reconstruction project. Sylvania Avenue from Sylvan Lakes Boulevard to McCord Road. We were able to benefit from the county engineers receiving ODOT funding for that project. And that project is going to be, I forget the exact estimate, I apologize, Mr. Mayor, but it's about a $2 million project, and our contribution towards all of those parts that are within the city of Sylvania, we're getting all of that work done for $81,000. So,
that project, Sylvania Avenue in that area was last widened, the center turn lane was added in 1996, and it's getting pretty ragged along there. There's a lot of traffic, so that's a good project coming along, and that's also a cooperation project with the Lucas County engineer.
That is also 2019.
All right, you do have in your council packets proposed ordinance 29-2018 to authorize this joint cooperation agreement. Mr. Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 29-2018. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Authorizing the Mayor and Director of Finance to enter into a joint cooperation agreement on behalf of the City of Sylvania with the Board of Lucas County Commissioners relative to the Brent Road, Centennial Road, Sylvania Metamora Road, and King Road resurfacing projects, waiving the second and third reading and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 29-2018 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 29-2018.
Second. Moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 29-2018 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 29-2018 is approved. Mr. Aller, we appreciate your efforts to find creative ways to leverage the city's money to do these projects. And I wanted to report to City Council that after serving on the Ohio Public Works Commission Board for on and off for 22 years, more on than off, the character of that board has recently changed. I find myself sitting at a table with all service directors and other employees of the other subdivisions. For some reason, it used to always be the elected officials sitting at that table, and then all of a sudden I was looking around and there's nobody else there. And when they say mayor, it's only me. It used to be half the people at the table. So from this point going on, actually the election, the designation happened last month, I believe, Mr. Aller will be representing the city of Sylvania at that table. It is an appointee of Sylvania, Maumee, Oregon, and Waterville. And you're serving as the alternate or the prime? I forget which.
I believe this year I'm the alternate.
Okay.
Yes.
Congratulations. but these are the, you see, this one also says Ohio Public Works Commission on it. That's a very important board.
Yes.
It's important to have representation there because every year the city of Toledo comes forth with new rules that would bias the formula for awarding the money to larger communities rather than smaller communities. We fight those off every year. Mr. Aller and before him, Mr. Ballmer, understood the numbers well and would brief me before I got to the table to say, no, I don't think so. But that's still going on, let me tell you. So we're happy for your work in this arena, Mr. Aller.
Thank you.
And continue your good relationship with the county engineer. All right. Moving on to agenda item 10, you have proposed ordinance 30-2018 concerning dealers and secondhand articles. I need the chief or the law director to describe what this is about.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is last year, or actually 2 years ago now almost, we enacted Chapter 765, which required the secondhand dealers in the city to post their the items that they sell online as part of the lead system. Since the passage of that legislation, the chief has been working since last year with there's only three or four in the city to get them in compliance with this chapter. And as part of that process and in talking with one of the attorneys for one of the secondhand dealers, two requested changes were made. The first, there was a discrepancy in the business hours between two of the sections, 765.09 and 765.11 had different hours listed. So that's that correction, is just to change the business hours. And then they also requested that Chapter 765.15 be Section 765.15 be added, which is the same language that's in the Ohio Revised Code provision for secondhand dealers. And what this section does is just provide an additional way that if a secondhand dealer purchases an item that has been stolen and they are not aware of it, it provides a way by which they can get reimbursed for the purchase that they made. It is another way to make the business whole if they unknowingly buy something that has been stolen.
So are we adding C and D or just D?
We are adding that whole section. That whole section is being added. And that's the same, I copied it verbatim from what the Ohio Revised Code provides.
Can you give an example of one of the secondhand dealers?
Toledo Coin requested that we add this. They recently, and the chief has been working with them and knows the facts better, but I can tell you the little bit that I know. They purchased something that was stolen, and it wasn't our police department, it was Toledo Police. It was out of Toledo that they came and sold it here. So the Toledo police came and got the item, and so they were out both the item and the money. So this is just a way for them to seek reimbursement from.
Is this any kind of secondhand, any product, or what, I guess, what does this encompass?
The chapter 765 defines what those items, what we consider secondhand items to be, and there was a lot of discussion about that when the legislation was passed. It's primarily, I can tell, it's Plato's Closet, Toledo Coin,
expensive keys.
Yeah, and those are in Once Upon a Child.
Once Upon a Child.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So those are the four businesses that it affects.
I have a question. So sure. Toledo Police can come into the city of Sylvania and grab that coin without any process?
It was at Toledo Coin. It was stolen. So that's what gave them, they knew it was at Toledo Coin, the item that had been stolen. And so they go, now it's through the court proceeding, the court will order restitution and they could maybe recover it from their insurance and stuff.
But they can seize it without any process.
I'm not sure what the process is. I don't, if it's
Did
stolen.
Toledo Police have to produce any documents to seize that coin at Toledo Coin, Chief?
Toledo Police came out and they advised Toledo Coin that property had just been taken over off Alexis Road in another jewelry store. And they had a copy of the report. And what happens when you go to leads online, you have to enter the information so all area police departments can take a look to see what's on leads online. And they could see that this property was taken to the Toledo Coin. And so Toledo Police went out there and let them know that property. And what they're doing is trying to ascertain who the suspect is by doing that. So we then got involved.
2 days later, the same guy came back to sell another piece of jewelry. So at that time, we put the habeas gravis on this guy.
That's a legal term.
And he was involved in a robbery of this stuff in Toledo. Yeah. So what it does, it allows three different ways for the business to get their money back. One, they can give the stolen item back to the victim. Or two, they can say, you have to buy it back from me. Or three, the original victim then can take them to court civilly and try to so it allows them recovery of the money that they spent by buying this product unknowingly that was stolen. So.
But the legislation that you passed did its job, right? Because it was uploaded to Leeds, and that's how Toledo Police knew where it was.
Okay.
So.
And then this also requires the owner of the alleged stolen article to file a charge against the person who steals it, right? Because a lot of this stuff gets stolen by kids,
correct?
Family members,
right?
Right.
Usually, the Nishinane Police Department, if we identify who the suspect is, we're going to go ahead and file the charges ourselves.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times we'll charge what's called receiving stolen property. We can prove that a lot easier than the original theft.
All right.
So.
Okay.
I would recommend, the chief and I both recommend it's the ordinance's approval and adoption.
And you've met with all these,
yes,
with all these secondhand dealers, mm-hmm, and they're comfortable with this.
This is actually requested by Toledo Coin.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're aware. I guess my point is,
yes,
they're aware.
Yep.
We're doing
and they've
this,
been
and they're expecting us to move forward.
Three of the four have complied since last year, and Toledo Coin,
yeah,
has recently complied. So we've got compliance from everybody, from all of the secondhand dealers.
Yeah. Great.
Mr. Fry, I think this one falls to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to introduce Ordinance Number 30-2018. All members of council, having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Amending the Sylvania Codified Ordinances 1979 as amended by amending Chapter 765, Dealers and Secondhand Articles, waiving the second and third readings, and declaring an emergency.
We moved and seconded that Ordinance Number 30-2018 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of Ordinance Number 30-2018.
Second. Moved and seconded for final passage of Ordinance 30-2018 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and Ordinance 30-2018 is approved. Turning to the second page of our agenda, we're up to agenda item 11. This has to do with the sale of two existing vehicles. The chief believes that we will receive more funds for these on govdeals.com rather than the trade-in value offered to us from the new car dealers. Mm-hmm. Chief, you want to expand on that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council recalls last October we put in the budget to purchase two new 2018 Ford utility vehicles. First part of this year, we took possession of those. And normally what I try to do is trade in a couple cars. So we had these two vehicles, and the offer that the dealer gave us wasn't acceptable to us. I knew we could go to the GovDeals, and we can get more money instead of trying to trade the cars in. So what we did is we repurposed two of our other vehicles to replace these two cars, and those are 2009 Ford Crown Vics that we repurposed, and you'll see them out on the street too. Anyways, we no longer have any further use for these two vehicles. The first one is a 2003 Dodge Stratus, and the other one's 2003 Mercury Sable. A few years back, we gave the Sable to the court to use, and we took that back, and we'll get rid of the car for them. One of the 2009 repurposed vehicles we just gave to them. So it would be my request for council's approval to authorize me to use GovDeal to sell these two vehicles.
Mr. Fry.
Can I have a quick question on that?
Sure.
Sorry. Just a clarification question. Is there a fee to use GovDeals, or how does that work?
I'm sorry?
Is there a fee to use GovDeals? Do they take a cut of the sale,
yeah,
or how does
it? It's a certain percentage.
Okay.
It's a fixed percentage. And once we sell the vehicles, I think it's like 4%.
Okay.
They send me a little bill.
Gotcha. Just curious. Thank you.
Chief didn't quote the numbers, but what he quoted to me was, we were offered $250 as trade-ins. He expects to sell them for around $1,000 or so each. Yeah,
$250, that's scrap.
What's that?
That's scrap.
Right. Well, we'll sell them as scrap if nobody buys them.
$250.
They're 15 years old.
Yeah. I drove a 2003 Sable. There's nothing wrong with that car.
Over the weekend, I drove a van that's 22 years old. Did just fine with it.
Yeah.
Gets great mileage.
frugal people drive old vehicles.
You can't buy what I'm driving. Mr. Fry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll make a motion to authorize the chief to place these two vehicles for sale through GovDeals.
Second.
Moved and seconded to place these two vehicles for sale on GovDeals.com. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item 12, committee reports. First is 12A, a report of the Building and Grounds Committee meeting held last week on May 14th. Mrs. Hussman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We did meet on May 14th to discuss the Sylvania Arts Commission's requested mural. In attendance was myself as chair, Katie Capellini, Patrick Richardson, and Mark Fry. Other council members present were Mark Lukey and Doug Hanum. From administration was Leslie Brining, and from the Arts Commission was Laura Jakes, their president, and Jennifer Archer, their executive director. The committee met to discuss the proposal from the Sylvania Community Arts Commission for a mural to be painted on the ground-leveled water storage tank located at 4492 South Main Street. The Arts Commission was informed that there would be a need to prep the tank with floral polymer paint before a mural could be painted on the tank. In talking to Mr. Aller after the fact, it's a clarification that the floral polymer paint is what needs to be used to paint the mural on the tank, not as a prep coat. So, but at the time, that's what we understood. Joe Shaw estimated the cost would be roughly $30,000. The tank was painted last year, which turns out actually it was 3 years ago, at a cost of $94,000 and is estimated to last 15 years. Council had concerns regarding how long the mural paint would last and safety issues of the students working on scaffolding to complete the project. Laura Jakes apologized that the Arts Commission did not do their due diligence on this project. They will find an alternative location for the mural. Katie suggested asking Sage Art about using one of the walls at the building at Plummer Pool. Laura and Jennifer will check with their board, but felt that location was a good alternative site. It was agreed that Katie would take the idea to Sage Art board next week, which I think is tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning.
Yep. The Arts Commission was informed that the mural will have to be approved by the Board of Architectural Review. Since the meeting, I have received an email from Ryan Creech. I guess, can I throw that in with the report from the Northview Arts Department? I think all of council received that. And I spoke with Kevin Aller about some of these details and with Jen Archer. I left voicemail messages for Ryan and David Navarre, who is the representative from the Arts Commission that has been working on this project. I didn't hear from either of them, but I think Katie maybe had an opportunity to speak with Ryan, according to the email you sent out.
I was hoping I would see him, but I didn't. But he
didn't
email me back and said he appreciated our support.
Okay. So he
very short.
Okay. I didn't hear back. I was hoping everything was okay.
This is the last week of school in Sylvania Schools. They are very busy.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And, yeah. So, I, in my email to him, I said we were very concerned about getting this project done for the kids and for the students. And so...
The Board of Architectural Review does not meet until Wednesday, June 13th.
The second topic that we did discuss at that meeting was Patrick had shared his idea of a digital projection on the water storage tank. Projections could include recognition of our high school sports teams and athletes, promote Sylvania events, nighttime art, endless possibilities. Doug voiced a safety concern of distracted drivers. Laura and Jennifer agreed to do some research on the idea and get back with us. Jennifer mentioned that there was a grant that just closed for digital projection, so we aren't the first to come up with this idea, but thank goodness we do have it now. The committee agreed that Chuck Silvernail, the head of the IT department, should be contacted for any input he might have to add. I have to admit I have not talked to Chuck, but I have a note to do so. And I think we closed about 5:40. I actually have to be honest and say I didn't look at the clock, but I'm guessing it was a 40-minute meeting. That's my report.
Thank you. That reminds me of a concern I've had. You see digital signs in front of schools, and those are oftentimes wireless from the principal secretary or something. I had concerns that the same thing could happen to those signs. It happened at the Rose Bowl when Stanford was playing maybe 15 years ago, and Stanford hijacked the scoreboard and put on whatever message they wanted. In the probably 10 years since we've been doing these signs in front of schools, we've had no hijackings take place. But I would hate to see that happen on our water tank. So apparently there are better security systems to keep people off of them. But you would expect that from Stanford. I forget who they were playing, but they took over the scoreboard for the game.
I don't think our kids have gotten to Stanford yet.
Okay.
To do that when they graduate.
Let's hope so.
All right. I guess I'd like, before this goes to the Board of Architectural Review, is Mrs. Hussman or members of council, you're comfortable with that mural being painted on that building? It would be towards the water tower side, I assume. It's painted brown now.
The picture we saw was the Erie Street wall.
Beside the north wall? That's very short.
Yeah,
I bet
the blue, it's like blue right now. Yeah. Am I correct in saying
that? The whole building,
yeah, the building
is
blue. And the wall is brown on one side and green on the other.
Okay, which wall is
going into the pool?
Right, so it's the east wall towards the water tower. That was my understanding.
Well, I think then that was what I was thinking, but then when we were talking at our meeting, we thought that the Erie wall was better because it's blank. Just flat. There's no
doors, there's no plaques, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, the only difference on that one is it's facing some neighbors. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you have concerns about that, please let me know before it goes to the Board of Architectural Review on June 13th.
So if it's something facing neighbors, we have at times notified neighbors when we're going to do something like that. Is there any reason we would consider that?
Well, maybe it should face the playground then.
You don't have to do that whole wall. The proportion is not right to do the whole wall. Maybe you take the north half of the wall or something, but you face the park. I don't think you're going to get comments. It's not going to distract drivers.
No.
On the Erie wall, I guess there's a couple neighbors and then the church. There's neighbors.
So Eldon Drive goes up right there. Yes, yeah. There are neighbors.
But it's just paint.
I would like to share with you that just the paint on the building over here on Main Street, I got scores of calls about that. Just paint, but... I got lots of calls.
Or it's just a green light.
What was that?
It's just a green light. Remember our history with green lights?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, the, yeah.
Well, I'm sure the Architectural Review Committee will carefully consider all those things.
Okay. an application needs to be submitted that'll tell them exactly where they're considering them.
Yeah.
You think you put it on the other side, the house across the street has those tall bushes, and they wouldn't be looking at it, and he's an art teacher and he has kids.
That could make a difference, yes. All right, well, it sounds like a good idea to get the project on someplace on that building. Okay. Any other committee reports to be made at this time? Any committee referrals? And move on to added agenda item 14. You were all distributed these color Xeroxes of proposed colors for the Main Street Improvement Project. Mr. Aller.
The rationale for that?
Just to break it up, I didn't know if the cobblestone, didn't know if we wanted that to be through that whole area, if it would be too much cobblestone. And the other thing is the ashlar slate will essentially be just like concrete. All they do is rub the top up with some plastic. And that will be better for
also strollers.
Strollers, yes. I thought the cobblestone was, that was one of the concerns. And we do have, you know, I know a few people that we see, I see regularly coming down through that
Kathy Smith is up and down there several times every day.
Kevin, I'm confused about where the slate would be versus where the cobblestone would be.
Okay. The cobblestone, you see the long sections of blue that are right yes. along the street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That would be cobblestone.
Okay.
The small squares, if you will.
Okay.
That would be the slate.
That are like heading in toward that, like up
there? Yes.
Okay.
Is it going to be shiny like this?
Yes.
Can it not be shiny?
Like...
We can
like a flat, like the crossing at Lord's to their pathway, it's just like, that's not shiny.
We can back off on it. They get this heavy sealer. We have to have some sealer on there to protect the pores of the concrete, but we don't have to go back.
And I assume the sealer's available not only in gloss, but also in more of a flat finish as well, yes.
What if it was all, like, big instead of... Like all of it is just using these big squares instead of these little cluttery cobblestones.
You know, Katie, some people would call that, instead of clutter, they call it visual interest, right? So
well,
maybe
it looks so lumpy. I mean...
Lumpy?
Well, I mean, like when you said, it's going to be like a trip hazard. This is your assuming, like what if you have, you know, two people in a wheelchair or three people, we're making the sidewalk wider.
Well, remember, you won't be able to walk in the cobblestone area because you're going to have light poles, hanging baskets, we'll have some intermittent
People are going to walk there anyway.
All of the poles that are along
it just seems cleaner just to go all big. I don't know.
I like this picture of terracotta better than this picture of terracotta. They're different.
Okay, you're looking at the brick red.
The brick red versus the terracotta.
I like the brick red for the cobblestone.
No, I mean just the form, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the brick red.
Color.
For the slate.
Yeah, I got it.
Is there a cost difference in any of this?
No.
Okay.
Okay, well.
And so it's going to be between the sidewalk and the street, correct?
Yes.
So
up on the curb. So curb, and then it will be the cobblestone, and then cement.
How?
And then every once in a while, there'll be a stripe.
How wide will this, what slate or cobblestone be from the street?
Cobblestone
will be about 4 feet wide. Okay. So the street, and then 4 feet of this, and then the sidewalk.
For what it's worth, I do want to compliment you and your people for you've put forth quite an effort here in trying to get this right. This is a we've learned that this is a difficult stretch to try to make aesthetically pleasing, right? And I think you've done a nice job. I would, for what it's, I would work to vote in favor of the of cobblestone approach. I think that's a street buffer kind of a product. I wouldn't worry about the safety of it. I think aesthetically it's better. But I'm happy to have you move forward any way you choose here. I think you'll do the right thing. Yeah, red brick color, right.
Is there a timeline that we're going to use?
Yes, we're under a tight time frame. We've got the tight construction schedules, and the contractor needs to make this selection. He has to get the stamps online. The colors sometimes can take a while to get them to the supplier.
We have a street project in there soon, right? So does this follow the street?
This will be part of it.
Okay.
That will be done before the golf tournament?
No.
And I already had, you know, every time I've got these cars, somebody asks me about what's going to happen to the in and out there. I'm sure that, huh?
That's not being mounted. I know we're in as it is. So we carry that will be open all throughout construction. It'll be short period.
Bill, maybe you got an update on where that stands, because this is West Fall. Others of you, like me, to step in the store, you're going to hear about it.
And I think Joe and Kevin shop, and Kevin know about the real details, what was happening, but we had the sign program in the last couple of years that companies that agreed to change from a pole sign to the monument sign, the one that we helped with was the NOIC when they moved from Starlight Plaza to Monroe Street. They took advantage of it. We gave the same offer to Sauter's, but he declined to participate. Kevin can probably tell you more.
Yeah, they have decided to, their existing pole is actually in the right of way, so it's considered an encroachment. And because of that there are ODOT dollars involved, that encroachment cannot stand. So they are actually going to just move the existing sign back about 14 feet, 14 to 15 feet.
Into the parking lot?
Yes.
And what is the grandfathered date?
2026.
8 years. He's got 8 years left. Let's take a closer look at that sign today. I mean, there is character to it. It needs to be, has some maintenance done to it. We've offered to help pay for a monument sign. We have a message board on the monument sign. We were going to let it be higher so it was not concealed behind the fence. Mm-hmm. And he just is making a business decision. He wants to stick with that. Will we be paying for the relocation, or is that his expense?
That is his expense. That was part of
his negotiation.
Yeah, he's in the right.
If you shop at Sauter's and you see Mr. Sauter and he recognizes you, I wanted you to be prepared.
I'll buy a case of wine.
Offer him a drink. Traffic is backing up to the expressway. Chief, I don't know whether there's anything you can do to help that, but that means hand directing traffic. That's what it means.
Do our best.
I'm sure there were some irritated people sitting there.
There were.
Just for the record, Belton Brick is a longtime Canton, Ohio company. Mm-hmm. Good to buy Ohio.
They are a center of support of construction in Ohio. I've toured several Belton plants. They're a great industry to have. Right?
Yep.
And they meet these requirements that obviously are respectable and they're better than the short. Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Sandberg,
yes. Just a quick announcement. I hope you all got an invitation to the open house on Thursday evening from Rick Stansley. It's the Kemper House right over here on the other side of the parking lot. It's the house we bought years ago to expand our parking. And Rick's done a great job in converting that from the outside. You guys know that the inside is in the office space now. Reception's from 4:30 to 6:30. Hope you can make it.
I believe the invitation said plenty of refreshments.
It did say that.
I'm anxious to see what Mr. Stanley means by that.
And what time?
I'm sorry?
Are they going to have remarks at any point in time? Not that you know of.
All right. If there's no further business, is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this city council is adjourned until our next regular meeting 2 weeks from tonight on Monday, June 4th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you all for